The Survival Guide to Life, a podcast about how to win in life every second, physically, mentally, spiritually, financially, consistently.
Hey everyone, we got another episode of Survival Guide to Life, and we got Johnny Crowder. He's a 28-year-old survivor from various mishaps, and now he's a mental health advocate as well as the CEO of Cope Notes, a text-based mental health platform. It provides daily support to users in nearly 100 countries across the globe. Now, with 10 years of clinical treatment, a psychology degree from UCF, as well as a decade of peer support and advocacy through the National Alliance of Mental Illness, Johnny is unmatched in speaking at mental health and in this perspective. He has a band called Prison, and his positivity and his experiences on mental illness range from schizophrenia to OCD, the pains of hardship with authenticity, levity, and wit. So Johnny, I appreciate, you know, you coming on the show and, you know, you giving your time. From everything that you've been through to where you are now, if you had the ability to go back and change any certain situation, would you, or would you just keep it the way it is?
That's a tricky question. So part of me is aware of the idea that if you go back in time and change one thing, then it could change everything. And I'm actually healthier now than I've ever been, so I would probably not try to go back in time and change stuff. But one thing that I think I would have liked to have learned sooner is the idea that I need to actively participate in my own recovery. So for years, I was under the impression that a therapist would fix me or a medicine would fix me, and I was kind of offloading responsibility. And had I known maybe in middle school or high school or college that I actually had to play an active role in my recovery, I think I probably would have made progress a lot more efficiently than I did, because it took me a long time to actually start seeing the fruits of working on myself.
And just trying to achieve those fruits of that labor of persistence as well as consistency, it's so hard because you kind of get caught up with your day-to-day, so to say, drama or all that, really to know that you're the one in charge of your mentality. And like, you know, you sort of kind of tell yourself that, and then there's other times where you're like, oh yeah, whatever, you know. It's just, how do you just really drive in that consistency?
I picture my younger self as someone who, I don't know if you've ever been driving and your car kind of loses traction, like it's raining or something and your car hydroplanes just a little bit. You feel like you're losing control of the car. My younger self would say, well, I can't control the car right now. But my older self is like, you're still in the driver's seat, dude. Like, I understand that the car is out of control and you don't have the same amount of influence over the direction the car is moving in right now, but you're still in the driver's seat. Like, it is still your responsibility to do something. And that, I feel that if you understand your role, if you understand the responsibility that you have at any given point over your own mental and emotional state, that drives consistency. Because on days that you're frustrated or on days where you actually feel really motivated, and all the days in between, if you are expressly aware of the fact that you are still in the driver's seat of your own life, that's going to drive the consistency no matter how you feel that day.
Okay, so it all just goes along with knowing that feeling at that time, but still understanding that you are in the driver's seat. And then it's just like, you could say a town you're passing by, like that mood or like that mentality is like a town and you're just going to drive by it. And then you can choose to go to what town you want.
Yeah, everything is temporary too. That's another thing that I didn't understand when I was younger. When I would enter into, you know, I'd start taking a medication and for the first couple months, maybe I was having, as I was adjusting to a new medication, and I would think that it would last forever. Like, oh no, I'm never going to sleep normally again. Or I would start with a new therapist and have a bad experience with them a couple months in, and I would think, well, great, now I'm stuck with this crappy therapist. No, you're not. You're not stuck with a medication or stuck with a therapist. Like, you can swap stuff out to find what works better for you. And at the time, I kept thinking that everything was permanent. I have to take this medicine forever. I have to see this therapist forever. And that's just, at least in my case, that wasn't true. You do have the autonomy to switch things up and find something that works well for you specifically.
No, you really do, as in, I kind of walked along those same footsteps as, you know, having to be diagnosed almost every thing, you know, in the DSM. And then from that, you know, just having different prescriptions and different quote unquote, you know, like ailments, but just from it all. And from where I'm at now, I wish, like you said, you know, I had more of a realization that, you know, I kind of can control the way I feel right now, and I don't really have to feel like that. Now, my question is, like, Johnny, like, why do you think really, like, that lack of realization of, you know, being able to control your feelings isn't really there with anyone?
I think you might have frozen.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Can you ask the question again?
Yeah. No, I said, why do you really think the lack of clarity is there within people to really notice or really understand that they can control their mental health or they can control the way they feel?
Well, we are kind of married to outside determinants of how we feel. So if our boss yells at us, we feel crappy. And if our boss tells us that we did a good job, we feel great. And there are all of these external stimuli that make us feel great or terrible. And we start thinking that those are the only things that have influence over us. And to be fair, there is some truth to that. Like, a lot, there's a long list of things outside of ourselves that have an impact on how we feel, how we think about ourselves, but we forget that we are a line item on that list. So if something that your boss says about you can make you feel good or bad, something that you say about yourself can also make you feel good or bad. And we forget that we are a person that has the same level of influence, if not more. I would argue we have more influence than those external factors. But when we look at a list, we might say the weather and my career and, you know, whether or not a plan gets canceled. And we make these big long, this big long list. But then when you think about things like guilt and body image and anxiety and fear of victory, fear of failure, like, you make this big long list of things on this side. And those are all the things that you personally have control over. And we focus a lot on the externals. And we think that, you know, something that our boss says about our performance has more of an impact on our performance than what we say about our performance. And I don't think that's true.
So how do you kind of like slowly sort to start the shift in changing this type of mentality and like, oh, okay, it doesn't matter what my boss tells me about my work ethic, or it doesn't really matter what, the guy down the street tells me. It what matters is my perception and like how I feel about myself.
Well, I'm not sure if my take is the correct one, so take everything I'm saying with a grain of salt, but I do think that to a certain extent what your boss says about your performance is important. I mean, that's it's like what your spouse says about your relationship is important. Like if you are in relationship with somebody, whether it's in work or romantic or friendship or whatever, their input counts, so you can't just say, well, I feel like I'm doing a great job, so screw my boss. Like their opinion does hold weight because of the nature of the relationship. But picture this. You are at work and your boss comes up and says, you did an amazing job on this project. And you look at the project and you think, wow, I know that I did a bad job. I dragged my feet, I missed my deadline. If I would have actually focused, I know I could have done twice the job that I did, and I'm really not happy with the way it turned out. Then your boss's words don't really count for that much. You know what I mean? Like, you're beating yourself up on the drive home, even though he congratulated you or she congratulated you. You are driving home thinking about all the things you could have done better. You are beating yourself up after that exchange with your boss, versus picture it the other way around. You turn in a project and you're like, I did the freaking best I could do. I went above and beyond. And then your boss comes up and says, you blew it. You should have done twice as much as you did. And your boss walks away from your desk and you think, no, I did a really, really good job on that project. Like, I don't mean to toot my own horn, but I know how much work I put into it. I know what I was up against. I made all my deadlines. I went above and beyond on the project. And you drive home either thinking that you did a good job or you're not even thinking about it because you leave it at work. So in both of those scenarios, your perspective of the exchange has more weight and influence over time than the perspective of your boss.
Okay, that's like a different aspect in which to look at it, but one that I could really see myself in trying to develop. But it's one thing when you read about these things or you try different stuff, and you're like, all right, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna be able to change this. And you get all pumped up. But then life happens, and then like execution, like how do you sort of ensure execution as well, and like not just in one ear out the other type of thing?
I don't know if I understand the question. Can you please ask it again?
Yeah, sorry about that. No, like how do you just sort of with understanding mental health and really trying to make a cognizant change, how do you do this effectively and instead of sort of like deceive yourself, sort of like lie to yourself, saying, oh, I'm doing it, but you really aren't.
Well,
Does that kind of make sense?
I forget the phrase. There's some phrase that something like if you want to know what kind of tree something is, you can just look at the fruit. So you're like, what the heck kind of tree is that? And there's peaches on it. You're like, oh, it's a peach tree. And I think that the same aspect can apply to your life. So you can tell yourself all day long that you are killing it and that you're happy with your career and you're happy with your relationships and you're happy with your living situation, all of that stuff. And even your progress with your own recovery, if you are trying to heal from PTSD or addiction or whatever, you can tell yourself all day long that you're happy with your progress. But then the real test is looking at your life. Like, am I behaving and thinking and feeling like someone who is actually happy in all of those areas? So you don't really have to look out into the world and cross-reference you know, you don't have to say, well, my friend is behaving like this. Am I behaving like my friend? No, just look at your own life. You think, if I was really happy with my living situation, then would I be spending so much time trying not to be at home? You know, all you have to do is just kind of ask yourself a few logical if-then questions to see if what you're telling yourself, the story you're telling yourself, is actually true.
You know, with the story we kind of tell ourselves and trying to remain true, I'm sure everyone always asks, you know, like, hey, Johnny, what was like sort of the aha moment with like Cope Notes? But like, to go a little beyond that, like, what was like the moments that kind of led up to that? And like, what was that like? And what was that mentality like?
So I encourage anyone listening to watch my TED Talk, like pause this and go watch my TED Talk. It's short, 18 minutes long. And it's about how I didn't really have an aha moment. I never had this sort of eureka moment that I was praying for my whole life. So if you want to hear that story, definitely go listen to it. But I do get that question a lot. Everyone is always asking, what was the turning point? What was that magical crossroads? And to be honest, my story was really long and hard and boring. I think one of the biggest lies we tell people is that, you know, oh, it's only when you hit rock bottom that you'll make a change, or there's going to be this huge pivotal moment. And it's like, that might happen for people, but I know that mostly it just happens in movies. Like for me, it was a long, frustrating journey of trying to make these little changes over time. It wasn't like one morning I woke up and said, my life is going to be different from today on. I never had a moment like that. I had a bunch of frustrating days in a row where I was getting a teeny, like imperceptibly healthier on a daily basis. Like I would keep reading these books and listening to these podcasts. And I was in school for psychology, so I was trying to learn everything I could. I was going to therapy. I was taking medication. I was seeing a counselor. I was also like looking into all different faiths to see if anything could help me learn about my health. And on a daily basis, it's not like, wow, I feel so much healthier than yesterday. It was like very, very slowly over time, I started realizing like this year versus last year, I've made some healthier decisions. And it made me realize that I was making progress. It was just really slow and there was no fanfare or awards acceptance. You know, no one was patting me on the back. It was just a very long process that felt unrewarding. But looking back, I can't believe the way my life is now versus the way it was 5-10 years ago.
With seeing where your life was and where it is now, and really being able to step into the shoes of, you know, people who have walked along the same path, like, how important do you think it is for there to really be an outlet for people to connect, especially with everything going on now?
To connect, an outlet to connect, do you mean like talking to other people about
just in general?
Yeah, peer support saved my life. It's one of the many things that saved my life. And if you're not familiar with the concept of peer support, it's just talking to someone else who has experienced the same thing or is experiencing the same thing. So like a support group or something, that's peer support. You're talking to people who, like Alcoholics Anonymous, that's peer support. You are around people who understand what you're going through, who have their own similar experiences. And I think the main value of that is it pulls you out of this mental silo. So when I was younger, I thought I was the only person hallucinating. I was the only person experiencing disordered eating or exhibiting self-harm behaviors. I thought I was the only person who had attempted suicide. I thought I was the only person who would go a week without sleeping and then sleep all day, every day for like a month at a time. I thought that I was just some freak of nature, and there was no one else in the world like me. And it didn't make me feel unique and special and cool. It made me feel like a mistake. And then through peer support and support groups, you meet all of these other people who are experiencing things just like you. And all of a sudden, you're not some weird one-off freak of nature. You are one of many people who are experiencing this, and it makes the problem feel so much more surmountable, because all of a sudden it's not you versus this huge problem. It's you and all of the people in your support group, and then all of those support groups of all the agencies in your area, and then all of those agencies in all of the other countries. And all of a sudden you realize it's you and millions of people versus this problem. And it there's strength in numbers for sure.
So with what's just been happening now, and like kind of everything going back on more of like a restriction and a lockdown, is something like a virtual, you know, support group something you would be like along the lines with?
Dude, I am a huge proponent of that, especially with peer support. I know that they're doing virtual peer support groups. And I know that even so, Cope Notes, the tool that I run, is a virtual peer support tool, but we're not the only one. There's plenty of amazing virtual resources out there where you can connect just on Skype or Zoom or whatever with people. They don't even have to be in your area, or chat rooms or whatever. There's a huge long list of just get on your computer and start Googling stuff. I'm positive there are virtual options for peer support wherever you live.
Yeah, no, I think it's really essential, especially with what's going on now and like just being cooped up and locked up, and then what it does to someone's mentality. To just go into Cope Notes, what sort of keeps the fire, you know, burning as you go through your progression with that as a business in general?
Well, running a business is the hardest thing I have ever done. And that is high praise, because I have experienced sexual assault. I have survived suicide. I was abused as a child. Like, I've been through a lot, and running a business was even, I can't explain how difficult it is after living the life that I have. And there are a lot of times, I'm going to be honest, where I'm working on the company, and because this is my full-time job. So morning till night, every single day, this is my whole life. And there are definitely moments where I consider quitting because I'm so tired and it's so hard. But one of the main things that kind of gets me out of bed in the morning and makes me remember that this is important work is when we get testimonials. When people, you know, on our website, in the main navigation, there's a button that says reviews. And when I get discouraged, I go and click that button. It's all these people, anonymous messages from subscribers who have used Cope Notes that says, this saved my marriage, this helped me check into rehab, this, you know, made me move across the country or apply for a job that I never thought I would get, or all of these people whose lives are changing because of Cope Notes. And I can read through and remember that even on days where it feels like I'm not making a difference, because I'm just sitting in my room with my computer, it reminds me that everything you do affects other people. And that's just enough juice to keep me going until the next day.
That's awesome. And that's like really well said. In when you look at an outlet as in something like Cope Notes, and if you're looking to get reassurance, you really want the foundations and the blueprints, so to say, to be authentic. And, you know, just speaking to you, you really feel that, as in, if you look on the opposite end, there are people who try to dabble or try to, you know, walk along these lines, but they do it for the wrong reasons. And that's where it kind of like really confuses me. But I don't want to talk about that. But to go to go on a different note, Johnny, if it wasn't the shattered backboards, what shoe would you choose if there was no limitation?
That's tough. I really like the... Are you putting me on the spot? I don't really shop normally with no budget, but if I did have no budget, I would say it's probably a tie between the Air Jordan 4, the Cactus Jack ones with Travis Scott. So yeah. They're like these light blue Air Jordan 4s. I'm a size 12 in 4s, if anyone is listening and decides to send a Christmas present. And then the other thing, the other pair this year that really got my attention was the Chunky Dunkies, the Ben and Jerry's Nike SB Dunks. So I'm an 11 and a half in those. So if there are any sneakerheads out there who are trying to offload a pair of shoes, those two are at the top of my list for no budget right now.
Okay. For me right now, it's the Off-Whites, the Jordan ones, the white, all white ones.
Oh, those are killer. I think that was a European release.
Yeah, those ones. And then if not, those are like, killer. If you want to go just dunks, like really old school dunks, I like are the Melvins, the black Melvins with the skulls on them.
Oh, I think are those highs or lows?
Yeah, they're highs, but on the toes, they got like a skull with like a crossbones.
That's killer. I'm new to dunks. So I've been into Jordans for a while, but dunks I'm still learning about. I'm still schooling myself.
I really hope they sort of like make a comeback. I feel like before they're big. Now it's sort of like either Jordan or Yeezy, you know?
Yeah. I think dunks are coming back for sure.
But just to go in on like prison and your music, you know, like I play guitar, I ghostwrite a lot. So just like what is sort of like your essence, or who do you sort of like look up to in sort of the music you play?
Well, that answer has changed over the years. I think now, so I'm 28 now, and I've been playing music for 13 years. So when I started playing music, I was really into like Slipknot and Korn and Linkin Park and like System of a Down and 3 Days Grace and Seether and Breaking Benjamin, like all of the music that was on the radio when I was a kid, like from age 7 to, you know, age 14 or 15, when I actually started playing shows. And I really think that as in my late 20s, I'm starting to develop a new appreciation for that style of music. So as a result, our newer music is starting to sound very similar to the music I grew up on, like the Slipknot and Korn and Linkin Park era of rock. So right now, my answer is the same as it would have been when I was like 11 years old, which is kind of cool. It's coming full circle.
That is pretty cool. So with trying to just find balance and, you know, trying to just maintain like everything as in each component of daily life, I always ask everyone, because I'm always curious or trying to like tweak my daily routine, what have you found that like works for you when like trying to keep amongst the busy life?
Well, I'm not sure if this is the answer you're looking for, but one thing that I've been trying to do, well, I'll say an easier answer is exercise. I have a tardive dyskinesia, which is an involuntary movement disorder. And it's similar to Tourette's, but basically some part of my body is moving like all the time. So as a way to assuage that, or assuage might be the word, is just like sitting on an exercise ball right now while we're doing the interview. It's giving my body a way to move, an outlet for that energy so that I can focus. So exercise has been huge for me, like riding my bike or going to the gym or running or jumping around or whatever. Sometimes I do basketball or football drills just for fun. And I think expending energy on a daily basis is important, even if you just go for a walk for like 10 or 15 minutes and watch a YouTube video or listen to a podcast, something, call your mom. So I think movement is really important. And then also purposely trying to invest in a hobby. Not, I don't necessarily mean financial investment. I know this year is really challenging for a lot of people financially. So I'm not saying you have to go buy something that has to do with your hobby, but I am saying invest your time into it. Like, I'm really into cars, for example, like supercars. So when I get real stressed out, I feel like my workload is 10 times taller than me and I don't know how to I get kind of freaked out. What I'll do is pull up a video, like a 5-10 minute video from Top Gear of them test driving one of my favorite cars. And it kind of reality checks me. It shows me that the world is bigger than whatever problem I'm facing. And for some people, that's not cars. Their hobby or their interest, their passion has nothing to do with cars. It could be stamp collecting or longboarding or whatever. I don't care what your thing is. Just always have some form of it available so that if you get peak freaked out and you don't know where to turn, you can, like right now I keep, so for example, I have a Lamborghini Aventador at my desk, and it's for people who are not watching this or listening to it, it's not a real one. It is a diecast model. It was like 10 bucks, but it helps provide perspective. And I think that if you have a hobby or interest, try to keep some form of it close to you at all times so that you can pull yourself out of sort of a depressive spiral if you feel yourself going into one.
That's really awesome advice, as in just trying to like people or in readings I've read, it's always said that, you know, humans really find peace or joy in being good at something or just being able to call something their own. So just really just trying to drive through and trying to find what is your unique outlet and just try to expand and shine on that. But with that, like some people, you know, are very multifaceted and multi-talented, and others are single talented, and you know, others it's like they shine quicker, it's easier than others. It goes back to, I guess, your mentality and trying to stay persistent. How do you sort of like try to find what you're good at?
Well, I want to kick back on something that you said, and I might just be nitpicking, but I don't think anyone is single talented. I don't think there's anybody on the planet who's only good at one thing. I think everyone is good at a whole ton of stuff. We just haven't tried all that many things. Like, if you made a list right now of everything that you've tried, like I've tried cooking, I've tried snowboarding or whatever, you make this list, and then you make a list of things that you've never tried. Well, I've never gone parasailing. I've never been to Europe, you know, and you match those lists against each other, you will realize that you haven't done most things. And that'll probably be the way it is for your whole life, because you're only alive for so long and there are almost infinity new things to try. I've never used virtual reality. That's one thing that I hope to get to try, like a VR game or something. I don't even play video games really, but I probably don't play video games because I've never really tried to see if I like it. So anyone who's listening, who doesn't really know where their passion lies, you're in a cool position because you already know where your passion doesn't lie. And a lot of people burn up their life doing things that they're not passionate about. And you are already aware that you're not passionate about the things you've tried, which is a really good place to be, because now you can look at that list of things you've never tried to see if you like those. Yesterday, for example, I tried autocross for the first time. BMW is doing this like ultimate driving experience thing in Tampa. And I signed up and went and tried to drive on an autocross track for the first time. And I'm 28 years old and I try to try new stuff all the time because you don't know what you're passionate about until you try it. So take an improv class or go roller skating or do something new, because eventually it's a numbers game. You will find something that you're passionate about.
I guess it just goes to the law of averages and like really just finding something that you're passionate about. Now, with that and just going into 2021, as Cope notes and as just you yourself, Johnny, is there any sort of plan or strategy, or is it more like enjoy and try to really embrace the people around you and just take it day by day? Or are you trying to map out 2021?
Well, I always think it's important to make a plan, but at the same time, I understand that it's important to sort of expect things to not go according to plan. So I say draft up a version of 2021 that you love, and then don't freak out when it doesn't look like that, because inevitably things will change. I think for 2021, my focus with Cope Notes is to partner with more organizations and businesses. Like right now, we obviously serve a lot of individual people. So if someone's listening right now, they could go to copenotes.com and sign themselves up, or they could sign up a friend or family member. Like, you can give a subscription to someone that you love. But while we want to continue doing that, we're also thinking, how great would it be if people could use Cope Notes through their employee wellness program at their job, or through their student wellness program at their school, or through their insurance, or, you know, through their YMCA. So in 2021, like right now, we partner with like 50 something organizations, I think. And next year, I want to see that number shoot up. I want to start partnering with all of these local organizations in all of these different communities, so we can start impacting people from the top down. Like right now, we're serving a lot of people where they are, which is awesome, like individually, but I want to get it higher up the food chain so that those people can use it for free through the organizations that they rely on every day.
So just with being able to scale that, have you really thought of like marketing strategy, as in just like running ads, so to say?
So
to try to like attract those type of people?
It's interesting to think that my previous job was, I worked at an advertising and branding agency. And before that, I worked at a marketing agency. And oh, wow. Then I run Cope Notes and I think, ugh, I don't want to do traditional advertising for this tool. And it's just the nature of the resource. And I'm open to being wrong. So I'm open to an advertising company coming to me and saying, hey, you're totally missing this opportunity. Here's the way to go about it. I'm wrong every day, so I welcome that. But the way I look at Cope Notes is, we would have so much more success going to these companies. Like, we've made more of an impact on the world through someone showing the Cope Notes website to their boss or to their principal than all the ads in the world could have done. It's that warm introduction, that warm handoff that gets us into the hands or onto the desk of the person who can say yes for 10, 20, 50, 100,000 people at a time.
No, I would typically want to agree with you, Johnny, but like just with the other day, I was, speaking with this brother. He's from UK, from London. And he was just talking about his, you know, his coaching and his mentoring. It's a little different from this, but he was talking about, you know, how he didn't do this as well as you. And, you know, just really kind of set the picture, or just kind of like make you look at the painting in a different way, as in, there are a lot of, say, for example, Gen Z kid, or, you know, just other people who normally wouldn't have, access to seeing this, but running these ads in like targeted per specific things, or, you know, changing it per different platform, like, oh, the way you do it on Instagram different from, say, TikTok, or different from LinkedIn, but just using that, but by doing that and doing it in a right, like, certain way, you reach a whole bunch of people that it could benefit, and who would be like, yo, where has this been my whole life? You know?
Right. Yeah, I do understand that. Like I said, my previous career was in advertising, branding, and marketing. So I'm very familiar with what it can do for certain types of tools. And I regularly meet with marketing and advertising consultants to make sure that we're on the right side of this debate. And like I said, I'm always down to be wrong. I'm always down to meet that perfect firm that's like, we can take this to the next level. But one thing that makes us really different from a lot of other resources is CopeNotes is extremely, extremely affordable for the individual, which means that we can't afford to spend the same amount on advertising as other companies. You know, a CopeNotes subscription is $8 or something. And if you get the year, it's $8, $10, $12, whatever you decide to spend, depending on your options. But other digital health resources can be $300-$400 a month. So their approach to attracting individual users is a lot more cost effective than ours, where we look at these partnerships with Mental Health America and the Crisis Center, all of these big, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, all of these partners that we have at the top level allow us to serve people through those trusted partners. And it's not that I'm against going the traditional advertising or marketing route, but when I'm looking at the greatest amount of impact we can make in the shortest amount of time, it's through those channel partners for sure.
No, I agree with you. I would just say along with that, just to couple with it, just certain like content or certain things and do that as, and just more lean on what you said and just focus on those partnerships. I just really feel like, because there's a whole, like, if you really sort of, it's not really expensive, because even for my podcast, just between me and you, Johnny, you know, like I was just saying, I maybe spend like $5 or $10, and like I had it targeted in my one of my mom's country, Sri Lanka, you know, and I kind of like reached some people there, and I thought that was cool in retrospect, to just connect with someone. So I'm not saying not to shy away from that, but like, you never know who you can really touch, because there are certain people who just like live behind the screen.
Right. So yeah, you know, like I said, this was my job before. We have done ad testing and determined that it was not successful for us. But if it will make you feel better, we will go back to the drawing board and start working with another firm and see if we can get something off the ground.
Oh, no. I was just saying that. I wasn't trying to tell you what to do in any aspect.
No, I will literally, I will make a call and we will see if we can start up that arm again.
I keep looking at that painting behind you, you know, it's really interesting, as in, is it a poster for a band? No,
it's just a flag that I got from Amazon.
Oh, wow. Huh. Now the shoes, if you go down, I see they're Nikes. Have you ordered it in any specific way, or just kind of had it on there?
I move them around a lot, but I typically keep my ones in the same place, so at least it looks somewhat cohesive.
So just coming towards the end with everything, I usually always ask the speaker to just end with a quote that resonated or kind of been in their heart recently.
I'm not really, it's funny, I'm not a big quote person and I don't have a great memory. So I don't really have something like that that I carry with me. But something that did just pop into my mind is Jesus said something along the lines of worry won't add a single day to your life. So basically, you can worry all you want about something, but it won't actually make you live any longer. It probably won't add a lot of value to your life if you spend all the time worrying about it. And it's something that has helped me realize that my anxiety, my worry about a certain situation isn't helping the situation turn out for the better. And I need a reminder like that. So it's not a quote that I carry with me all the time, but it did just pop into my head right now.
No, I appreciate that and your time. But just if anyone wanted to connect with Cope Notes or just connect with you and get in on a little personal touch, how can they connect with you?
So if you go to copenotes.com, you will find everything you need. There's a link to our podcast there. You can obviously subscribe to Cope Notes on our website. We didn't really get to talk about what Cope Notes is or does in the episode, but basically Cope Notes provides daily mental health support via text message. So if that is something that interests you, definitely go to the website and check it out. And Cope Notes is on Facebook and Instagram. I am on Facebook and Instagram. I think, Cope Notes has a Twitter, but I don't really believe in Twitter. So if you search me on Facebook or LinkedIn, my name is Johnny Crowder. And if you go on Instagram, my handle is Johnny Crowder Loves You. And Cope Notes is at Cope Notes on this.